VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Ashley and John Russell tell us how scientists are working to deal with coronavirus mutations.
The makers of coronavirus vaccines are learning how to change their vaccines to deal with virus mutations. Experts are looking to influenza or flu vaccines to help them understand if and when the shots may need to be changed. Richard Webby directs a World Health Organization flu center from St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Virginia. He said that the process will not happen quickly. It's not really something you can sort of flip a switch, do overnight, Webby said. Viruses mutate or change often. Recent studies have raised concerns that first-generation COVID-19 vaccines are not as effective against a coronavirus mutation that first appeared in South Africa. However, many of the COVID-19 vaccines are made with new technology that permits changes. But it will still be difficult for experts to decide whether the virus has mutated enough to make it necessary to change the vaccines.
The WHO and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration are looking to the worldwide flu vaccine system for help. Influenza mutates much faster than the coronavirus. National centers around the world collect spreading flu viruses and observe how they change over time. They send samples to special WHO laboratories for high-level antigenic testing to decide on vaccine strength. WHO experts and government rulemakers work together to agree on each year's new vaccine recipe. Manufacturers then make the necessary changes. For COVID-19 vaccines, Webby said an important step will be establishing a similar observation and testing network. It can then decide on which mutations are most worrisome. Today, there are wide differences in how nations track and test mutated versions. For example, Britain does more testing of the changing viral genome than the United States does. Three variants first discovered in Britain, South Africa, and Brazil are worrisome because of combinations of mutations that make them spread more easily and quickly. U.S. researchers reported another mutation found in seven variants that have appeared in several U.S. states. Researchers do not yet know if this mutation makes the virus easier to spread.
Just because a variant spreads more easily does not mean it will be resistant to a vaccine. But the variant first identified in South Africa is raising concerns. Columbia University's David Ho put blood samples from people given the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines into small containers with the mutated virus. He found that vaccine-produced antibodies still offered protection, but the protection was much less strong. Early test results of two other vaccine candidates, from Novavax and Johnson & Johnson, supported Ho's findings. Both still offered protection. However, that protection was weaker in South Africa than in other places. A much smaller test of the AstraZeneca vaccine in South Africa has raised questions about its effectiveness. Several of the approved and available COVID-19 vaccines require two shots for full effectiveness. The drug maker Moderna is about to explore one possible solution. Could a third shot of its vaccine raise immunity enough to fight off some variants? Ho said it is a good idea to test, because people may still have plenty of cushion if their antibody levels are very high.
Major manufacturers also are developing experimental variant vaccines as an extra measure. COVID-19 vaccines produce antibodies that recognize the spike protein that covers the coronavirus. When the virus mutates, sometimes the spike protein is changed in ways that make it harder for vaccine-produced antibodies to recognize. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are made with a piece of genetic information called messenger RNA. It tells the body how to make some harmless copies of the spike protein that train disease-fighting cells. To change the vaccine, the drug makers can simply change the first version of genetic information with mRNA for the mutated spike protein. The AstraZeneca vaccine and the one made by Johnson & Johnson are expected to be available in the United States soon. Both are made with cold viruses engineered to introduce a spike protein gene into the body. Making changes to these two vaccines requires growing cold viruses with a mutated gene. The process is a little more complex than the mRNA process, but it is still not as difficult as remaking traditional flu shots.
First-generation COVID-19 vaccines were tested in tens of thousands of people to be sure they work and are safe. Simply changing the recipe to better target virus mutations will not require repeating those studies in thousands of people, said Dr. Peter Marks. He is the vaccine chief with the FDA. He recently told the American Medical Association that the FDA plans to be pretty nimble when it comes to approving vaccine changes. If an updated vaccine is needed, he said, tests in a few hundred people would likely be enough to know if it causes a good immune reaction. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm John Russell.
American researchers have a new theory about how an object struck the Earth and caused the dinosaurs to die off. Scientists mostly agree on where the impact happened about 65 million years ago. They say a huge object struck an area off the coast of what is now Mexico. Astronomers have said the most likely cause of the strike was either an asteroid or a comet. In recent years, researchers have presented evidence that the impact was caused by an asteroid. The theory suggests the asteroid came from an area between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. But a study by two astronomers from Harvard University presents a new theory, that the crash was caused by a comet. The researchers say the comet came from an area containing icy debris on the edge of the solar system. The area is known as the Oort cloud. Their theory states that the comet was pulled into the solar system by Jupiter's gravity. The comet then came very close to the Sun, whose tidal force caused it to break up into pieces. The researchers believe one of the pieces crashed into the place that scientists have identified in Mexico. The team based its theory on a model created to predict the probability that a long-period comet from the Oort cloud would hit Earth. Long-period comets take more than 200 years to orbit the Sun. Because comets come from frozen areas of the outer solar system, they are icier than asteroids. They are known for leaving long trails of gas and dust as they melt. The new study was recently published in Scientific Reports. The lead author was Amir Siraj, an astrophysics student at Harvard. Jupiter is so important because it's the most massive planet in our solar system, he told the French press agency AFP. Siraj said the findings showed that Jupiter's large influence pushes these incoming long-period comets into orbits that bring them very close to the Sun. The comets experience such a large tidal force from the Sun that the most massive of them would shatter into about 1,000 fragments, he said. Each of those fragments would be large enough to produce a crater the size of the Mexican site, he added. That massive impact is estimated to have been equal to the strength of about 10 billion nuclear bombs. The U.S. space agency NASA has estimated the strike created a huge crater about 180 kilometers wide and 900 meters deep. The event is believed to have caused widespread wildfires, earthquakes, and ocean waves. It also released chemicals into the atmosphere, leading to severe cooling. Scientists blame the event for destroying more than 70% of plant and animal life. In addition, all dinosaurs that were not bird-like died out. The researchers say their theory can be tested by further studying the crater in Mexico, as well as possibly those on the moon. The study also suggests that similar impacts can be expected to strike Earth about once every 250 to 730 million years. But the other lead researcher on the project, Harvard professor Avi Loeb, noted that that is just an estimate. I'm Brian Lynn.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol.
Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in December of 1941 was one of the most successful surprise attacks in the history of modern warfare. Japanese warships, including several aircraft carriers, crossed the Western Pacific to Hawaii without being seen. They launched their planes on a quiet Sunday morning and attacked the huge American naval and air base at Pearl Harbor.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air, President Roosevelt has just announced.
The attack apparently was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu. A Japanese attack upon Pearl Harbor naturally would mean war.
Many of the American military personnel were asleep or at church. They were totally unprepared for the attack. In fact, some people outside the base thought the Japanese planes must be new types of American aircraft on training flights. The sounds of guns and bombs soon showed how wrong they were. The Japanese planes sank or seriously damaged six powerful American battleships in just a few minutes. They killed more than 3,000 sailors. They destroyed or damaged half the American airplanes in Hawaii. American forces, caught by surprise, were unable to offer much of a fight. Japanese losses were very low. There was so much destruction at Pearl Harbor that officials in Washington did not immediately reveal the full details to the public. They were afraid that Americans might panic if they learned the truth about the loss of so much military power. The following day, President Franklin Roosevelt went to Congress to ask for a declaration of war against Japan.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. We will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but we'll make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
The Senate approved President Roosevelt's request without any opposition. In the House of Representatives, only one congressman objected to the declaration of war against Japan. Three days later, Germany and Italy declared war on the United States. Congress reacted by declaring war on those two countries. The Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor ended the long American debate over whether to become involved in the Second World War. American politicians and citizens had argued for years about whether to remain neutral or to fight to help Britain and France and other friends. Japan's aggressive attack at Pearl Harbor united Americans in a common desire for military victory. It made Americans willing to do whatever was necessary to win the war. And it pushed America into a kind of world leadership that its people had never known before. President Roosevelt and his advisors had to make an important decision about how to fight the war. Would the United States fight Japan first, or Germany, or both at the same time? Japan's attack had brought America into the war, and it had severely damaged American military power. But Roosevelt decided not to strike back at Japan immediately. He would use most of his forces to fight Germany. There were several reasons for Roosevelt's decision. First, Germany already controlled much of Europe, as well as much of the Atlantic Ocean. Roosevelt considered this a direct threat, and he worried about possible German intervention in Latin America. Second, Germany was an advanced industrial nation. It had many scientists and engineers. Its factories were modern. Roosevelt was concerned that Germany might be able to develop deadly new weapons, such as an atomic bomb, if it was not stopped quickly. Third, Britain historically was one of America's closest allies, and the British people were united and fighting for their lives against Germany. This was not true in Asia. Japan's most important opponent was China. But China's fighting forces were weak and divided and could not offer strong opposition to the Japanese. Adolf Hitler's decision to break his non-aggression treaty with Soviet leader Joseph Stalin and attack the Soviet Union made Roosevelt's choice final. The American president recognized that the Germans would have to fight on two fronts, in the West against Britain and in the East against Russia. He decided it was best to attack Germany while its forces were divided. So the United States sent most of its troops and supplies to Britain to join the fight against Germany. American military leaders hoped to attack Germany quickly by launching an attack across the English Channel. Stalin also supported this plan. Soviet forces were suffering terrible losses from the Nazi attack and wanted the British and Americans to fight the Germans on the West. However, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and other leaders opposed launching an invasion across the English Channel too quickly. They worried that such an invasion might fail while the Germans were still so strong, and they knew this would mean disaster. For this reason, British and American forces decided instead to attack the Italian and German troops occupying North Africa. British forces had been fighting the Italians and Germans in North Africa since late 1940. They fought the Italians first in Egypt and Libya. British forces had successfully pushed the Italians across Libya. They killed more than 10,000 Italian troops and captured more than 130,000 prisoners. But the British success did not last long. Hitler sent one of his best commanders, General Erwin Rommel, to take command of the Italians. Rommel was brave and smart. He pushed the British back from Libya to the border with Egypt. And in a giant battle at Tobruk, he destroyed or captured more than 800 of Britain's 900 tanks. Rommel's progress threatened Egypt and the Suez Canal. So Britain and the United States moved quickly to send more troops and supplies to stop him. Slowly, British forces, led by General Bernard Montgomery, pushed Rommel and the Germans back to Tripoli in Libya. In November 1942, American and British forces, commanded by General Dwight Eisenhower, landed in Northwest Africa. They planned to attack Rommel from the west, while Montgomery attacked him from the east. But Rommel knew Eisenhower's troops had done little fighting before, so he attacked them quickly before they could launch their own attack. A major battle took place at Kasserine Pass in western Tunisia. American forces suffered heavy losses, but in the end, Rommel's attack failed. 3 months later, American forces joined with Montgomery's British troops to force the Germans in North Africa to surrender. The Battle of North Africa was over. The Allied forces of Britain and the United States had regained control of the southern Mediterranean Sea. They could now attack Hitler's forces in Europe from the south. The Allies wasted no time. They landed on the Italian island of Sicily in July of 1943. German tanks fought back, but the British and American forces moved ahead. Soon they captured Sicily's capital, Palermo, and within weeks they forced the German forces to leave Sicily for the Italian mainland. In late July, Italy's dictator, Benito Mussolini, was overthrown and placed in prison. The Germans rescued him and helped him establish a new government protected by German troops. But still, the Allies attacked. They crossed to the Italian mainland. The Germans fought hard, and for some time they prevented the Allied troops from breaking out of the coastal areas. The fighting grew bloodier. A fierce battle took place at Monte Cassino. Thousands of soldiers lost their lives. But slowly, the Allies advanced north through Italy. They captured Rome in June of 1944, and they forced the Germans back into the mountains of northern Italy. The Allies would not gain complete control of Italy until the end of the war, but they had succeeded in increasing their control of the Mediterranean and pushing back the Germans. One reason Hitler's forces were not stronger in Africa and Italy was because German armies also were fighting in Russia.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.